Joining us right now, a gentleman who knows quite a bit about the game as a former player, also a current Nuggets TV color analyst and a host on Altitude 950 in Denver. So he knows it all. It's Scott Hastings. Scott, it's Dave and Nate. Thanks for getting up this morning and joining us. How are you?
Boys, how you doing? I'm on vacation, so I don't have to work at all except to talk to you guys.
You're on vacation? Scott, gee, you owe Kevin Sherritt's money or something? He gets you to call in on your vacation?
Well, you know, just seriously, if you ever compare that third kid of his and my picture, they look similar. That's all I'm saying.
Scott, that needs
no... Dave's got one of those, too.
I do. My second kid looks a lot like Grant Napier. There's red hair. I don't know where the hell it came from, Scott, so I'm in the same boat.
Well, there you go. See, it happens, and, you know, just got to move on and deal with it.
Once upon a time... Aaron Aflalo was extremely coveted and a fine two-way player indeed. You over there in Denver had one and a half run-ins with him. Of course, 3 years playing for Denver, and then came back for a sniff a little bit. 50 games back a couple years ago. Talk to us about Aaron and the differences between Aaron 1.0 and Aaron 2.0.
Well, and now maybe 2.5. I don't know. But when he came here, and he came from Detroit, and I remember talking with Chauncey, and Chauncey had actually played with him in Detroit. And Chauncey said, you know, Scott, you're going to love this guy. He's a gym rat. He's a team guy, and so on and so on. And everything that Chauncey said was absolutely true. This guy was as hard of a worker as I'd ever seen, especially in practice. A great teammate, didn't mind following his role, was more of a defensive guy that developed a kind of an offensive game with George and his staff and everybody when they had him here that first time, and really kind of blossomed and I can't even remember if it was a trade or free agent. I think it was eventually traded, but really increased his value. Came back the second time, and he did not hit it off with Brian Shaw, and he was the same cordial guy, same sweetheart. He's a leader, kind of a quiet leader, but a leader. But I could tell something was going on wrong with him, something was going on as far as his relationship with Brian Shaw, and that really deteriorated to the point where they just, they traded him because they traded Fournier, who just got paid, by the way, to Orlando, got Aaron back, then traded him, and then they got Will Barton in a pick. But I think his problem in Denver the second time was a relationship problem he had with Brian Shaw. First time, he was golden. In fact, we hated seeing him go. So I don't know the Aaron you're going to go. I don't know if his head's right. I don't know if that was just a tough situation because of Brian Shaw. You guys are seeing relationships fall apart between coaches and players all the time. It's not always good. You got to learn to play. But even Magic Johnson, I believe, helped get one guy fired a long time ago early in his career. So relationships happen. I tend to bank it more on that second time around in Denver, because I always thought he was a great guy. I think he's upped his game. He's a better offensive player. He's more mechanical as an offensive player, but very solid and a great team person.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as the Brian Shaw thing, I kind of wanted to just clarify a little bit more on that, because I remember hearing that Aaron Aflalo wasn't the only guy that had philosophical differences with Brian Shaw, right?
Well, the ownership eventually did, because they fired him. So, there was a handful of guys. And listen, Brian made some mistakes coming in here, and I love Brian to death. Mm-hmm. And I think Brian will get another opportunity somewhere and will absolutely be an outstanding coach. And I sincerely mean that. But I think he came in first time, really wanted to put an impression. He was following George Karl, who had won, been in the playoffs 10 straight years and won 50-plus games for four or five straight years, followed a 57-win team and wanted to put a stamp on it and didn't build relationships like he probably should have first and foremost. And that was his downfall in Denver. It started with Andre Miller and some of the other guys as well. But listen, I think Brian Shaw's going to be good, but heck, it's a learning process even for coaches.
Scott Hastings, Denver Nuggets color analyst on the radio, joining us on KHTK. All right, so from what I've seen from Aaron Aflalo in his career, he appears to do just about everything at the level of a starting two guard. Now, maybe his defense isn't quite as the elite level as it was, but everything is pretty much solid. So rather than asking you what Aaron Aflalo does well, what are his biggest weaknesses?
Oh, gosh, that's a good one. I think there's at times he cares too much and he lets his own emotions overwhelm him. Not in a boogie kind of way where he goes off on the officials or anything like that, but on a mad at myself kind of way. Mm-hmm. And so he might step in a hole and he might dig it a little deeper than he needs to. He's had that happen. I guess if I say he's probably his harshest critic is himself. And because of that, I've seen him kind of, I don't even know how to say this. Like I said, dig a hole for himself that didn't need to just because he's putting too much pressure on himself. So I would say that would be the biggest thing. I think he's a little slower than he was, obviously, in his first handful of years in that first go-around with Denver. And I'll tell you a story, and I think I told Sheritz this story a long time ago also. I had a buddy of mine who was a coach, and we went out somewhere in Idaho, and they had this great steak place, supposed to have the biggest steaks, and if you can eat it, you win a mountain or something, whatever. And the kids, he had three little kids, and his kids are going, "Daddy, Daddy, let me have steak." And they said, "No, you get hamburger." "Daddy, Daddy, let me have steak." And I said, "Come on, Fred, let me have steak." And he goes, "No, Scott, you'll learn this someday. You're making me hamburger as long as you can, because the first time they eat steak, they'll always want steak and never want hamburger, and someday you can't afford that." So to me, that happens in the NBA. Guys that are good, solid role players and guys you need on your team, you give them a taste of stardom, a taste of starting, a taste of running plays for them and getting used to that. And then all of a sudden you put them in as a second or third wheel. They struggle with that. I think that happened to Aaron also. I think he still had been eating steak, was used to eating some steak, and now was asked to go back to try some hamburger when he came back that second time around with them.
That is a hell of an – it really is. And what gets me when you're describing that is the Sacramento Kings is a franchise basically force-fed steak into Tyreke Evans like farmers do to geese for foie gras to pump him up in his rookie year. I mean, they absolutely had their fist in his throat. Here's some stardom. And it completely wrecked a good portion of his career, at least with us. So you're absolutely right, Scott. And then you sit there, you fast forward now. I got to ask you, how are you guys liking Mike Malone?
Love him absolutely to death. I he is what, he appears. What you see is what you get. And he's been amazing. He's been handed, a super, super young team. I think they've got, seven guys, I think it is now, seven or eight guys under the age of 24, six or seven under 21. So, and as you guys know from up there, he's a teacher.
Yeah.
I don't know how that bodes for them as far as wins and losses, which, coaches always struggle with, because you do got to have that veteran guy that's willing to take that team, put them on his back. So it'll be interesting, but I absolutely love the guy.
Just to follow up, George Karl, I remember going on a Denver radio station shortly after George was signed by the Kings, and it was amazing when I heard, Scott, it might have been us talking, actually, that the polls in Denver, if you took them, would have shipped back Michael Malone in a first-round draft pick for George Karl. The fans missed the hell out of George. Now that we fast forward a couple of years, are you surprised at all to see how quickly the George Karl situation in Sacramento imploded? And did you think you'd be here now saying, we love Michael Malone and George Karl's out of a job?
Yeah, and I'll be fair to George too, because I loved him too. I he was awesome, and they had a great mix, and he and Masai Ujiri worked well together. They were, it was peanut butter and jelly. It worked good. There was never peanut butter and jelly when he was in Sacramento. It was like cabbage and peanut butter or something. it didn't look right. George was awesome with the team that he had here. I think with the team that Denver has here now that is so young, I think Mike Malone's the right guy to have this team. There was more of a veteran mix when George was here and handled that team well. I mean, he implemented his style of offense that he wants to play three or four years before he left here. and had to develop that and everything else, and it worked. I mean, Denver was one of the more dangerous teams, especially when you played them at home in the league for a 3 or 4 year period.
You know, and it's kind of remarkable to me as we visit with Scott Hastings, a Denver Nuggets radio analyst here. When you look, it wasn't that long ago that George Karl was successful in Denver, and then by the time he comes here a few years removed, people are talking about his system. They're looking at what they see on the floor, and they're saying, this doesn't work. I mean, this guy is antiquated. It's dated. And then you can look right down the road at the Warriors and how they've kind of revolutionized the way basketball is played over the next couple of years. Over the last couple of years, what I'm getting to here is it conceivable to believe that the game really did pass George Karl by that quickly in a span of 2 to 3 years where his system was rendered obsolete?
No, I don't think so. I think George, and he still preaches that Carolina way, the team first, and which is what Steve Kerr has been preaching in Golden State. So, I don't think it's antiquated at all.
Because to me, Scott, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but to me, like what George Karl did didn't seem all that dissimilar from what Golden State would do. It's just Golden State put up the threes in more numbers, and obviously they made them right at a much more efficient rate.
Well, the first time I went to training camp, and I watched the offense they were putting in, where there was a lot of penetration kick, threes, pot up, and I went and talked to one of the assistant coaches. I said, let me get this offense. You do this, you know, and you kick it. You want to look for threes. And he goes, yeah, rim threes and free throw line, which I think is what San Antonio liked to do. Although I thought they relied too much on threes and what hurt them in that end of that Cleveland series. And I go, but I told the guy, and I said, yeah. He said, yeah, that's what we're doing. I go, you ain't got nobody to shoot a three. So you can have a great system that can get you 30 threes a game. But if you ain't got nobody that can shoot those threes, all you do is got a system that can shoot threes. So there's one thing, and I don't know who said it there or when I was talking to him about the Nuggets, is, you know, we got a whole bunch of shooters. They just don't have very many makers. And so whatever system you're going to be in, if you don't have a maker, you're going to struggle. And then lastly, I will say this about George. It's his fault, their fault, Blatty's fault, the owner's fault. It doesn't matter. When I was on the Detroit team, the one an NBA championship, I have never seen a more in-line organization as far as mission statement, what they want to do, and where they wanted to go. From the owner to the ball boy was in line in this direction we're going. And I've been on other teams that have been really good, won 50-plus games, and there might be just one little chink in that armor, you know, just one little chain that's moved to the side, and though we're very good, we're still not good enough to win the whole thing. And that's what I would say to every organization. And you look even at Golden State's, you know, what they've been able to do for the last couple of years, and with the ownership finally getting settled, getting a general manager that's as good as any general manager in the league in there, the coach who, by the way, failed as a general manager, but really has the mentality to be a head coach. You get the right stars, you know, until they got Durant the other day, you know, they developed stars. They didn't get stars. They developed them. Now they, of course, kind of broke that mode when got their own star with Durant. So they've kind of done it the right way. But to me, it starts with the organization all being in lockstep. The team and the organization has to be in lockstep or you're in trouble.
Last thing for you, Scott, you mentioned playing with the Pistons. And, of course, you won a title with them. I'm hoping you saw the 30 for 30 on the Bad Boys. I'm just curious, having been around that, how accurate did you think that was?
Well, I was there for the second championship. I thought that was as accurate a portrayal. I thought you could truly get the personalities, even, God, what would it be, 30 years later almost, 20 mm-hmm. years later. You can still see that Bill Laimbeer is probably an a-hole now, just like he was back then. You know, you could see the fierce competitiveness in Isaiah now as an older man that now put this into a premier athlete at the age of 30. What are you going to get? So yeah, I thought it was real accurate. I know the year that after we won two in a row and then we lose to Chicago in the Eastern Conference Finals, got swept by him, actually, the famous walkout game. And I was talking to Sally about that the other day. He goes, yeah, they always mentioned who walked out. They never mentioned who was on the floor. shaking everybody's hand. And I was out there with John, obviously, but that team was worn out by the time that they lost that fourth game in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you saw them walk off the court, and I wasn't there the whole time that they went through that whole process. Not only were they probably displaying bad losing or whatever, they were a worn-out team, physically, mentally, emotionally. And I thought the film kind of got, if you just paid attention, gave you that sense of that also. I mean, that was truly the end. They didn't have no more to give. And if you look what happened over the next year or so, year and a half, most of that team was disbanded, retired, or broken. So, yeah, I thought it was an outstanding 30 for 30 and very, very accurate.
At least tell me you're on an island somewhere with an umbrella in you. I mean, you're on vacation. I'm just curious now. We started out with saying you're on vacation. You're doing something good, right?
Well, while we were talking, I just fixed my first cup of coffee, and God, I needed it. I'm sitting there looking out at Grand Lake, Colorado, which is the headwaters of the Colorado River, and trying to figure out where I put my Advil because, man, I got a headache.
That's a vacation. Yeah. Yes, sir. Scott Hastings, always an honor and a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Guys, anytime. Kiss Kevin for me.
Yeah, we always do. Take care. He's the boss.